Are you into horses? These magnificent animals are deeply tied to humans and have served us as laborers, transportation, and companions for ages. But to learn just how far back the connection goes, check out these big ideas from The Horse, A Galloping History of Humanity by Timothy C. Weingard. Timothy is an associate professor of history at Colorado Mesa University and the best-selling author of 5 books. Here he is to share 5 key insights from his latest.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tim Weingard, New York Times best-selling author of 6 books and an associate professor of history at Colorado Mesa University. I will be sharing with you 5 fascinating insights from my new book, The Horse, A Galloping History of Humanity. Insight 1. Indo-European horsemen in the making of modern Eurasia. The domestication of horses on the windswept grasslands of the Pontic-Caspian steppe of Ukraine in southern Russia around 3500 BCE was nothing short of an equine revolution in transportation, traction, trade, and war. Riding the first generations of domesticated horses, plundering Indo-Europeans spilled out of the steppe and quickly overran the Eurasian expanse from the Atlantic Ocean through Europe and India to the western frontiers of China. Beginning around 3000 BCE, the relatively egalitarian, peaceful, and gender-equal societies of Neolithic Europe and the Indian subcontinent were rapidly and completely replaced with the hierarchy, customs, genetics, and language of these mounted Indo-European marauders. This wholesale remodeling established a more militaristic, capitalist, male-dominated culture that has been both the bane and the blessing of Europe and its former global empire for millennia. As a result, Indo-European is now the ancestral language for roughly 3.7 billion people, or 46% of our global population. In addition, within a few generations, Indo-European DNA accounted for an astounding 40 to 50% of the total genetic fingerprint across Europe. More telling is that almost all European males have Y chromosomes from these mounted invaders, while between 60 to 90% of men now living in the Indian subcontinent can trace their patrilineal DNA and the caste system to colonizing Indo-European horsemen. During their conquests, Indo-Europeans also introduced the smoking of psychoactive marijuana to Europe. Complementing archaeological evidence, during the 3rd millennium BCE, derivatives of the Indo-European root word for cannabis, canna, spread widely across Indo-European branch languages. While blazing their way across Eurasia, mounted Indo-Europeans also kicked off a fashion revolution. There is a direct correlation between horseback riding and the origin and widespread adoption of pants. The oldest recovered pair of purposely fashioned trousers, dating to 1300 BCE, belong to 2 trend-setting mummified Indo-European horsemen unearthed, with cannabis paraphernalia, in the Tarim Basin of China's western Xinjiang province. In addition to propagating their language, genes, and male-dominated ethos, this transformative, history-defining Indo-Europeanization of Eurasia also disseminated domestic horses, wool sheep, wagons, chariotry, bronze, pot, and pants across a significant portion of the planet, with ripple effects that have not yet subsided. Insight 2. The horse and the downfall of indigenous plains peoples. Contrary to popular belief, the wholesale adoption of the horse, following its reintroduction to the Americas by Columbus, by indigenous peoples of the Great Plains, notably the Comanche and the Lakota Sioux, was not a sociocultural benefit. The horse corrupted the lives and societies of indigenous peoples and facilitated their downfall and subjugation. The common perception of the horse as the sole positive and uplifting element of the Columbian exchange for indigenous peoples, fitting apologetically into narratives otherwise filled with disease, desolation, and death, is not accurate. Horses had been absent from the Americas for roughly 10,000 years, long enough that from an environmental standpoint, they were as much as an invasive species as cattle, smallpox, Europeans, and tumbleweed. The introduction of colonizing horses upended intricately evolved grassland ecologies, contributing directly to the collapse of bison populations. The sweeping adoption of an equestrian culture by indigenous nations also undermined traditional military, economic, egalitarian, gender, and social conventions. These were replaced with bison fur-based export capitalism, divisive social, gender, and economic hierarchies, and unremitting intertribal warfare, transforming the heart of the prairies into a brutally contested war zone awash with the blood of bison, horses, and human beings. As a result, bison populations began to dwindle by the 1830s. To feed their bison-based economy, the Comanche, for example, harvested at least 280,000 animals annually, with peak years reaching 574,000. Dwindling bison numbers were further pushed to the precipice of extinction by spiraling ecological pressures triggered by the introduction of horses and cattle whose diet, including sparse water resources, overlapped with bison by 80%. From an estimated pre-Columbian population of 60 million, by 1890, only a few thousand bison remained. The battle for supremacy and survival in the American West was not just being played out amongst rival indigenous peoples, settlers, and cavalrymen, but also by cattle, horses, and bison. This cultural upheaval was compounded by ways of cascading disease. The horse accelerated the delivery of deadly pathogens to which indigenous peoples had no acquired immunity. From 1730 onward, an epidemic of smallpox, often escorted by other lethal pathogens, ripped across the plains every 10 to 20 years, shattering indigenous populations who entered the paternalistic and bleak reservation era. Insight 3. Betting the Farm: The Horse and the Birth of Hollywood. In 1872, former California governor and railroad magnate Leland Stanford made a wager with some friends. Although he had no visual proof, he was convinced that all four hooves of a horse were off the ground at the same time while galloping. His pals believed otherwise. Stanford's two passions, aside from money and politics, were wine and horses. He owned two vineyards as well as breeding stables for racehorses at Palo Alto Stock Farm, now Stanford University, still known colloquially as the farm. Unlike the ancient Egyptians, who had sought an answer to the same question, new technology and some ingenuity on the part of Edward Muybridge, an eccentric and unconventional English photographer hired by Stanford, finally caught up to the horse. It was the embryonic age of photography, and each glass plate had to be wet-coated immediately prior to snapping a picture, significantly impacting shutter speeds. This made it impossible to take successive rapid-fire shots. That is, impossible with only one camera. On June 10, 1878, Muybridge set up a row of 12 single-lens cameras at 27-inch intervals on a track at Palo Alto against a white backdrop, to contrast with the galloping dark horse named Sally Gardner. Muybridge laid across the track a series of electromagnetic circuits and tripwires attached to the camera shutters to time the consecutive exposures to record a virtually instantaneous chronological sequence. Muybridge printed the serialized photographs on a round glass plate. By spinning this disc on what he called his zoopraxiscope, which projected the images in a repeating loop on a screen, Muybridge, Stanford, and Sally Gardner gave birth to the motion picture with the pioneering 3-second clip dubbed The Horse in Motion. Stanford also won the $25,000 bet and affluent bragging rights. All 4 feet of a horse are off the ground during each stride, collected under its barrel as it switches from pulling with the front legs to pushing with the back. And so Hollywood began with horses, and a bet at the racetrack down on the farm. Insight 4. The Great Manure Crisis of 1894. New York City was sinking in shit. The metropolis and its 3.5 million residents were being swallowed by the surging contamination and accompanying communal health problems produced by their indispensable personal, public, and commercial transportation. Instead of greenhouse gases and climate change, in 1894, the mounting pollution crisis took the shape of unimaginable piles of rancid manure produced by more than 200,000 urban horses and mules who donated upwards of 3,000 tons a day to the squalid streets of Gotham. Urban centers around the world were facing the same shitty situation. London, for example, was bombarded by a daily output of 4,500 tons from 300,000 horses. Vacant lots, public parks, and alleyways accumulated heaping piles of manure reaching 60 feet. The trendy New York brownstone row houses with their elegant staircase stoops climbing to second-story parlors were purposefully built to rise above the streaming slurry of horse manure and urban muck. Adding to this atmosphere of urban disease and decay were thousands of dead and bloated horses left to rot in the filthy streets. It is hard to believe that just over a century ago, horses were literally everywhere and used for everything. They were the heartbeat of commerce and transportation. A bird's eye view of the planet would show the urban centers of humanity crawling with horses and their fly-ridden manure. It was so abundant that the initial Ford factories used manure as a supplemental fuel source, burning through 2,000 pounds a week. Horse droppings were used to manufacture the very machines that would depose the steadfast animal from its mantle of power. Or framed another way, one contamination was used to produce another contaminator. The motorized solutions that saved us from horse pollution and manure piles in the 20th century are now imperiling us with their own pollution in the 21st century. Currently, researchers have been developing technology to recycle or convert the methane in manure into hydrogen to power fuel cells for electric cars. The goal is to be able to run a car for a year from the annual excrement of one animal. As evidenced by the Great Manure Crisis of 1894 and our current struggle with the internal combustion engine, our primary modes of transportation have always had emission problems. Insight 5. Horsepower and the Big Lie of Blitzkrieg. The unrivaled presence of horses on the German front lines during the Second World War facilitated the overthrow of the Third Reich, which feigned mechanized superiority at the outbreak of war. Nazi Blitzkrieg was just another bluff based on Adolf Hitler's big lie. It was carefully crafted propaganda to hide the true vulnerabilities of an anemic and backward German military equipped for the last war while attempting to fight the next. In truth, the Nazis had far more ponies than panzers. Blitzkrieg, as it turns out, was fueled not by oil, but by oats. The German army that goose-stepped and galloped through Poland, Denmark, Norway, Belgium, the Netherlands, and France in 1939 and 1940 was only 15% mechanized at best. As motorized casualties mounted and German industry faltered, the horse was increasingly drafted into service. With the German invasion of the Soviet Union in the spring of 1941, the inherent limitations of Hitler's horse-drawn military became starkly exposed. The myth of Blitzkrieg and successive German army groups evaporated at the gates of Leningrad, Moscow, the Caucasus, and Stalingrad. By 1944, more than 90% of the German military relied on hooves for transport. On the other hand, the American, British, and Canadian forces were fully mechanized, while Joseph Stalin's Red Army was increasingly trending in that direction thanks to the unrivaled production of American industry. A scene from the award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers serves as a poignant example. Following the unconditional German surrender in May 1945, Private David Webster is riding in the back of a truck, passing an endless line of dejected German prisoners, when he is suddenly overcome by a surge of anger and resentment. Webster, who left his English literature studies at Harvard University to enlist, seemingly vents years of repressed trauma by screaming among a highly articulate string of obscenities, "Say hello to Ford, say hello to General fucking Motors, look at you, you have horses, what were you thinking?" Germany employed over a million more of these animals than in the previous war, thrusting almost 3 million horses into military service. Examining the outcome of the Second World War through this lens, it was precisely the heavy use of these horses by the Germans that helped Webster and his band of brothers win the war. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Timothy. That was 5 big ideas from The Horse, A Galloping History of Humanity by Timothy C. Weingard. Also check out our book bite for 8 Bears, Mythic Past and Imperiled Future by Gloria Dickey. I'm Michael Kovnet. Have a great day.